September 10th, 2009, we were going to Buffalo Wild Wings to watch the first NFL game of the season. And we get there in a super pack. We're like, hey, man, let's just get the wings to go and watch the game in the UC in the dorm and everything and just chill out. He was like, all right, cool. Put the wings in the back seat, put my seatbelt on. But unfortunately, we never made it back to the dorm because a lady was texting and driving and ran us off the road, causing us to flip into an embankment, and I broke my neck in two places, and I was paralyzed immediately. Adversity happens to everybody. Everybody's been through something in their life, but it's not what happens to you that defines you. It's how you respond to it. How are you going to respond when your kid doesn't get in at school? How are you going to respond when you don't pass that math test? How are you going to respond when you're going through a divorce or whatever the case may be? You know, whatever your adverse situation may be. And I chose to respond in a positive manner. My name is Fletcher Cleaves, and I am undone.
Hey, friend, I am glad you are here. Welcome to another episode of Becoming Undone, the podcast for those who dare bravely, risk mightily, and grow relentlessly. I'm Toby Brooks, a professor of rehab science at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Over the past two decades, I've grown more and more fascinated with what sets high achievers apart and how our failures can frequently be the necessary steps on our path towards success. Each week on Becoming Undone, I invite a new guest to examine how high achievers can transform from falling apart to falling into place. I'd like to emphasize that this show is entirely separate from my roles at Texas Tech, but it's my attempt to apply what I've learned and what I'm learning and to share with others about the mindsets of high achievers. Growing up, Fletcher Cleaves loved sport. He learned early on that through sheer will and work ethic, his oversized competitor's heart could make up for his undersized frame. Throughout high school, Fletcher learned to use the doubts of naysayers as fuel, eventually becoming a key member of his varsity football team. With dreams of playing college football on the line, he spent countless hours in the gym and on the practice field before finally earning a spot on the team at Lambeth University. Tragically, just days before the first game of his collegiate career, returning home from a restaurant, Fletcher and friend Dave Mullins were forced off the road by a distracted driver. Both survived, but Fletcher's neck was broken in two places, ending his collegiate career before it ever officially began. In the weeks, months, and years to follow, Fletcher attacked his recovery following the accident the same way he'd attacked life before it, with a competitive spirit and a positive attitude. He completed a degree in computer science, and he's gone on to travel the globe, inspiring hundreds of thousands along the way. An accomplished speaker with a TEDx talk to his credit, today he's a full-time motivational speaker, sharing his story on stages and podcasts the world over. I absolutely loved my conversation with the incredible Fletcher Cleaves, and I hope you will too in episode 55. Respond. This week we're fortunate enough to have the wheelchair nomad. Fletcher Cleaves is joining us from Memphis, Tennessee. Fletcher, great to have you.
What's going on, man? Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Excited about our combo.
Same here. So read up on your story. Certainly it's a powerful one, and we'll get into all of the particulars. I usually start off with a little bit of a softball. Who did little Fletcher want to be growing up?
I think I always wanted to be some type of athlete, something with athletics. Of course, you know, every kid's goal is to be in the professional of their sport, NBA, NFL, MLB, soccer, it doesn't matter. So I think tiny Fletcher was definitely wanted to be in the NFL. But then as I got older, I kind of fell in love with mathematics. So I think I wanted to be an engineer.
Awesome. Well, having watched your video, I gather that you were a little undersized, but a big heart kind of guy. So I guess start at the beginning, wherever that was for you, wherever you tend to start your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up, born and raised here in the South, Memphis, Tennessee, I was definitely the boys will be boys, right? I was, you know, not a lot of like not big trouble, but just breaking windows, throwing baseballs in the windows, dirt claws, you know, ding dong ditch, you know, just regular adolescent stuff, right? So my parents wanted me to stay out of trouble, so they put me in organized team sports. Once I got in there, I just fell in love with the competition of everything and the craft and getting your body prepared from, you know, just the competition and everything. I fell in love with baseball. I played baseball, basketball, track, football, something year-round to make sure that I didn't have any free time to get into trouble, right? And about seventh or eighth grade, I fell in love with football. And I was like, hey, I'm going to try for my high school football team. I went to a large high school, so it was definitely tryouts. And, you know, I remember going to the coach, you know, maybe 5'3", 101 pounds or something, you know, really tiny, and 99 pounds or something, whatever. And I'm like, I'm here to try for the football team. He's like, you want to play football? And I'm wearing these big glasses. He's like, yes, please. Can I play football? And then I end up going out, balling out my freshman year and started both ways. Had a phenomenal year from played receiver and DB, like 10 interceptions in 8 games. And, you know, I know, right? So it was pretty good year. Then 10th grade year, same concept, you know, just kind of undersized, want to try for the varsity team. End up making it, balling out the same thing. And 11th or 12th grade, it was already said and done. I was going to be one of the leaders and the captains of the team. It's such a young opportunity in my life.
Coming across field to the 20, cuts it up to the 25, gets a block, gets outside, across the 40, to the 50. Good return to Fletcher Cleaves.
Bacon.
Complete to Cleaves, spins at the 10.
Not everybody in the world can catch the ball, stop, spin, do the 360.
And I was blessed enough to receive a football scholarship. I remember my pops telling me, he was like, hey, son, if you get a football scholarship, we'll buy you a car for graduation. Because I don't have to pay for school. I'd rather buy a $6,000 starter car than pay for 4 years of college, you know. So I was like, definitely that. And so that happened. And I left for college maybe 2 days after high school graduation because, you know, football season starts right when college starts. So we had been training that whole summer. I left 2 days after to get my body prepared for the upcoming collegiate season and try to get in the best shape. End up gaining like 25, 30 pounds of muscle from May, June, July, August, just 2 days, every day, working out, personal trainer, creatine, protein, post-workout meals, pre-workout meals, all that stuff, right? So I'm getting like 25 pounds of muscle in 4 months. And I got named one of the starters in the opening game against Georgia State. I got named, well, the starting kick return. As a fresh, true freshman, he just put me out there as a starting kick returner, second string receiver. Just be prepared if my name gets called. And unfortunately, a week or so before the game, my roommate and I, Dave Mullins, September 10th, 2009, we were going to Buffalo Wild Wings to watch the first NFL game of the season, the Tennessee Titans versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we get there in a super pack, as I mentioned, the first NFL game of the season. And we like, hey, man, let's just get the wings to go and watch the game in the UC in the dorm and everything and just chill out. He was like, all right, cool. Put the wings in the back seat, put my seatbelt on. But unfortunately, we never made it back to the dorm, because a lady was texting and driving and ran us off the road, causing us to flip into an embankment and broke my neck in 2 places, and I was paralyzed immediately.
Wow. Life-changing. On your website, it was suggested that she was distracted for 3 or 4 seconds. That was the estimate.
Yeah, that's all it took, man. That's all it took. I remember just her not looking, but not paying attention to the road. She was looking down, trying to multitask, and she just drifted over onto the double yellow line, and I just saw headlights coming towards me, and I just swerved to miss her.
Wow. Well, certainly you had a long road of recovery ahead. Mm-hmm. What do you recall about maybe the initial moments or even the initial hours after the accident?
Yeah, so I remember the first thing I thought, you know, when the doctors were telling me what the diagnosis was, you know, I remember being trapped in the vehicle, not being able to move, thinking my legs were broken, like, because, you know, you don't immediately think, like, oh, I have a spinal cord injury, right? But you're like, something's not right, like, why can't I, my legs must be broken or something, they must be swollen. And when that happened, I remember putting me back in the EMT, in the back of the ambulance, and then, you know, she's giving me all these tests, and she says, I want you to move your right leg. And I said, okay. And she says, move your right leg. I said, I did. Then she says, okay. Then she asked me the same thing on my left leg. I'm like, I'm moving my legs, but she keeps asking me to move them. So I'm like, something must not be right. Then I thought the worst. I was like, okay, that must be like mangled or super broken. And she says, I said, give it to me straight, doc. I was like, well, you look fine. And I'm back in I'm on the way to the hospital. She was like, but we think you have a spinal cord injury. We're going to run some more tests when we get to the hospital. And after they confirmed I had a spinal cord injury, I remember my first thought was, am I ever going to be playing football again? And I was 18 years young, didn't really have a lot of responsibilities, so I wasn't really thinking about, like, family and all that stuff or what I'm going to do for a job or where am I going to work. I wouldn't think about any of that. My first initial thought was, am I going to be able to play football again?
Yeah. So the initial days after an injury like that, there's inflammation, there's swelling, there's, you know, there's a lot of questions. And you start to get some clarity after that initial injury starts to kind of settle in. And so did you get a prognosis fairly early that this was the likely outcome, or was there hope that you would walk again? What was that initial maybe first month like?
The first month, because I was only in the hospital 10 days. So the first month, the first 10 days was just, you know, running tests. I had two major surgeries. And I remember the doctor was saying, you know, there's no need for Fletcher to be in the hospital. He's not sick. You know, he is in great shape. He's been working out for 4 months. He's gained 25 pounds of muscle. I've never seen anyone of this great shape in my life undergo, you know, that traumatic of an accident. So he was like, there's no need for him to be here. He's not sick. He can start therapy immediately. So I was blessed enough to only be in the hospital 10 days. And I was blessed enough to not be in the hospital that long and immediately to start therapy. So that first month was just working on small stuff. And I remember crying in therapy and thinking like, you know, she was like, day one, we're gonna work on basic stuff. I need you to pick up these pennies, or I need you to, you know, just take these 5 pound wrist weights. I'm like, 5 pounds? And I'm like, this is actually heavy. Like, you know, you go from benching 250, 265, 275 to 5 pound wrist weights, you can barely lift them. And you're like, what's wrong with my body? Like, literally 2 weeks ago, I was running, jumping, squatting, you know, 440, 425, or whatever the case may be. And now I'm barely struggling with 5 pound wrist weights. And that was kind of an eye opener to let me know that this is not going to be as easy as I thought it was.
Sure.
When you're physically gifted and somebody asks you to do something physical, you've always relied on your physical capabilities. Like, this is going to be easy. I can do this. Like, 5 pounds is going to be light work. And I'm like, holy crap, this is harder than I thought.
Up to this point in your life, I mean, you mentioned you were maybe a little undersized and you always had to prove yourself physically, but obviously you figured it out. I mean, your diet was on point. Your workout was on point. Had you really encountered any significant adversity up to this point in your life?
Nothing compared to now. It may have been adverse during that time in my life. Like I broke my ankle when I was 14 in a game. Well, dislocated fingers during games, you pop right back in, tape it up, get back out there. And that was probably the extent of the adversity I have been through at that moment in my life. You know, just, you know, playing receiver in high school with a broken finger with a splint taped to your middle finger. It's like, dude, how am I going to catch the ball in this game Friday night? And you just practice. So that was just maybe the biggest adversity I've gone through, because I was blessed enough to be raised in a two-parent household. So I really didn't have to worry about much. They wanted me to focus on just being a teenager. I remember begging them on my 16th birthday, can I get a job? And my dad was like, son, you got the next 50 years to work. Just enjoy 4 years of high school. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. That sounds like a great upbringing. So you find yourself in a position you never would have chosen, obviously. So you're working your way through rehab. Up to this point, I mean, you even mentioned your future goals revolved around being an athlete. A lot of your identity is tied up in being a football player, being a physical specimen. You know, you've always been able to do things with your body. When did it start to sink in that identity was gone?
I think the first time I saw myself in the mirror without a shirt, when the atrophy would start kicking in. So you look at your body and you got the pecs and the abs and the biceps and the triceps, but then not really moving much as I continuously just laid in the bed and not really did much. I remember looking at myself in the mirror without a shirt and realized how much atrophy had set in and how much muscle I had lost. I was like, oh, like this is really happening. And I really don't look like I used to. And as you mentioned, I was always Fletcher, the football player, you know, that guy, or Fletcher, the guy that runs track, or whatever the case may be. And not to be identified with that was definitely a mental challenge.
Yeah. I had a guest a couple of weeks ago, Tim Kite. He's a motivational speaker, and he's dealing with cancer right now. And he mentioned something to me that I'd never really considered. He said, you know, a lot of times people are well-intentioned with their encouragement, but sometimes what people say is hurtful. And as an athletic trainer, I'm thinking back to times when I know athletes sustained career-ending injuries. And part of me wants to motivate, and I want to encourage that athlete to keep trying and to push through. And, you know, we have to have a goal to shoot for. But on the other hand, there's a reality to the situation. And the fact that you have sustained a serious spinal cord injury, the likelihood of ever setting foot on a field again in uniform is fairly low. So during that time, what was your process like? Were you fighting to get back on the field, or were you just fighting to return to function and a new normal?
So you're absolutely correct about what the motivational speaker said, that a lot of times people say things and they have good intentions, but don't really come out that way. But to answer your question, it was very small goals. Of course, at the beginning, the main goal was I want to get back to playing football, being able to walk, all that fun stuff. But then had to look at the reality of the situation and say, all right, let's work on being able to lift 5 pounds first. All right, let's go upgrade to 10, then 25. And then, all right, let's work on core muscles. Because, talking to my therapist and just not really knowing much about spinal cord injuries, it takes, I think, 275 muscles just for you to stand in place. Have to be activated from your feet muscles to your ankles to your calves to your thigh, your glutes, your hamstring, your core, your obliques, all that stuff has to be activated, keep you balanced, and all that. And so I was like, so let's work on getting step by step and section by section is what my therapist told me. But she knew what really happened, but she wanted me to try for me to realize it. So she's like, I know Fletch won't be able to do these ab workouts because he doesn't have that functionality. But me telling him no is not going to help him. He has to see it for himself to really, okay, instead of trying to sit up, let me just work on rolling over. Mm-hmm. Let me work on getting on my stomach and getting on my back, 20 times. And so it was a process, a step by step.
Yeah. Well, considering what you've been through, a lot of people would be bitter. A lot of people would not use this adversity to build the platform you built. I mean, it's positive. It's encouraging. You show people what they can do as opposed to what they can't. Mm-hmm. Was there a low point? I mean, did you have to work through some things to get to this point, or have you always just been an optimistic kind of guy and you defaulted to the positive?
I've always been optimistic. I've always been looking at the glasses half full type of situation. I remember one time I got into some trouble in 11th grade. Nothing really big. I think I was using my cell phone in class or something like that. And the teacher took it. And, of course, my first thing is to go to the principal and hey, man, look, I've always been able to get myself out of situations, whether it's for my physical capabilities or my charisma or whatever the case may be. And the principal was like, not this time. You're so used to getting out of situations for your physical capabilities or because you play football. This time it's not going to happen. So, to answer your question, yeah, it's like I've always been able to use my physical capabilities to overcome adversity. So when you ask, was I always optimistic? I was like, yeah, because I've never really been through anything. And the things I've gone through, I overcame them fairly quickly, whether it's studying for a test or whatever the case may be. So because this wasn't 6 months, I'll be back to normal. It was like, no, this is life altering.
Yeah. So you go from being a college freshman with big dreams. You shared off camera that initially the goal was to start here and maybe hitch your wagon to a coach and go to a bigger, greener pasture. Mm-hmm. That evaporates. That goal is no longer there. What do you do in order to reorient, and how does your mission today start to enter the equation?
Yeah, so we all know that being an athletic, father time is undefeated. Your sport is going to end one day for everybody, whether it's when you're 40 or when you're Bo Jackson and quit early or whatever the case may be. But so my parents knew that, and they instilled education inside of me in high school. So according to the state TSAA or TSAA or whatever it's called, you had to have a 2.5 to play high school football. But my parents told me that if I wanted to play, I'd have a 3.0. So I'm like, why do I have to have a 3.0? The state only requires – and that was just instilling not to reach for the bare minimum, because they know that Fletch is going to do whatever he needs to do to not get in trouble, or just as long as he can play football. So if you want to play football, you got to have a 3.0. So literally every report card for 4 years straight, I got a 3.0.
This reminds me of a concept I wrote about recently, and it's one that has certainly served Fletcher well too. The idea is margin. In business terms, margin's what we have that helps us maximize resources like funds or time or other efficiencies. And when we aim for the minimum, it costs us margin. We lose any possible cushion that can protect us from unexpected happenings, like when we give ourselves 21 minutes to make a 20-minute commute. We're only safe if literally everything goes according to plan. Even the slightest deviation from that spells failure. For Fletcher, his parents instilled the idea of doing better than the bare minimum, and he found success. Likewise, being in the best shape of his life at the moment of his life-altering accident likely saved him, or at the very least, dramatically improved his outcomes. That's what giving our best can do. Minimum effort leaves no margin for error, but maximum effort helps build margin.
And it's like, son, why don't you just, 3.5, 4.0? I was like, I mean, you said 3.0. What's wrong with that? And so they still had education inside of me. So when, once I lost my physical capability, I immediately reverted back to, was like, all right, but you still got your mind. You still got your mental capacity. You still can go to college. You know, people with disabilities go to college and graduate all the time. Why can't that be you? So I just started honing in on my mental capabilities and studying harder. And I went back to college and I was able to graduate with a degree in computer science.
That's awesome. So you weren't in the hospital very long, but you're in outpatient rehab, I'm sure, working. Yeah. How often?
Entire year. Rehab was Monday through Friday, 8 hours a day.
Wow.
It was like a job, basically.
Yeah. So what did you learn about yourself during that year?
How sleepy I get all the time. I was so sleepy all the time. Because, you know, the nurses are coming to get you up, volunteers, they're coming to wake you up, help you with breakfast, like 6:30. Maybe 7. Your first session is at like 8 a.m. Then you might have PT from 8 to 9, OT from 9 to 10, pool from 11 to 12, lunch from 12 to 1, short arm circuit from 1 to 2, arm bike from 2 to 3, then standing frame, you know, just to get your blood circulating. They put you in a frame to stand you upright because, you know, your body's made to stand up and let your blood circulate from 3 to 4. And then you might have riding from 4 to 5 or whatever. And so I was like, dude, I'm so tired. Like, I'm so used to being able to take. It was the first time I wasn't, like, in high school, college. Naps were huge. Like, after practice is shower, nap immediately. Then, you know, wake up, eat, you know, whatever. But not having those breaks in between, I was like, I am so sleepy.
Well, you have to give yourself some credit because physically that's demanding, but neurologic healing is fatiguing in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I've got a dear friend who has MS, and when she has flare-ups, she'll say, you know, it takes so much more energy just for me to read, to concentrate. Like, the neurologic fatigue is different than a muscular fatigue. Mm-hmm. And you had both of those going on because spinal cord injuries don't ever fully heal, but peripheral injuries can, and you're certainly stimulating the system. Mm-hmm. In order to try to get it to heal. So mm-hmm. Certainly that's a pretty normal consequence. What about mentally, going from a college athlete to now someone who's working 5 days a week, full-time job, to do things that you took for granted previously? What was that like for you psychologically?
It was hard in the beginning, but I'm fueled by competition. So my parents told my therapist one day, it was like, if you want Fletcher to excel in therapy, just bet him he can't do something. Like, Fletch, I bet that you can't get your shirt on in under 30 seconds. It was like, all right, if you win, you get an extra hour in the pool, or you get an hour to lay down, or whatever, extra sleep. We can start therapy at 9 instead of 8. But if you lose, therapy starts at 6:30. I'm like, all right, let's go. So, of course, me being the athlete I am in competition, I'm like, I'm trying to hurry up and get it done. And it opened my eyes because I'm 19 at the time now. And I was like, the first time I may fail, I'm out of my bets. Therapy started at 6:30 a.m. I'm like, a week later, let's run that bet back. Let's do it again. And I'll get it. And they pointed out, it was like, see how harder you tried when, you know, competition fueled. Like, they realized that competition fueled me. So I realized that, and it mentally was tough in the beginning. But once I realized that, I kind of used that competition to, I mean, it sucks to say, but I was trying to be better than every other patient. Like, that guy's over there lifting 10 pounds, I'm going to do 12. You know, it was like, well, Fletch, he is from the waist down. He has his entire upper body strength. I was like, I don't care. Yeah, I just want to be, you know, I want to be the best, you know.
Right.
And I just saw putting myself in competitive mindset again, because I wasn't playing anymore, but I needed that spark, that edge, that fire, that hunger. I needed something that gave me that same type of feeling as being on the field. And I chose that. They don't know we were in competition, but I knew.
Right.
And once I used that and just I started excelling.
Yeah. I think that's great. Obviously, you've mentioned your parents and the therapy team. Were there others who gave you social support during this time that were part of your recovery process?
Absolutely. My friends and my high school and childhood friends, for sure, definitely were instrumental in my recovery. Because knowing me prior to the car crash and coming to visit me in the hospital and seeing me recovering therapy, and when I came home from therapy, they come in to visit during Christmas break and just hanging out and talking to me and realizing, like, you know, Fletch, he's still the same class clown. He's still the same kid. He jokes around. He's just sitting down all the time. So as I got stronger and we progressed, we got older, they made a lot of sacrifices to make sure that I was able to have a fulfilled life. I always say that my friends and family never allowed me to have a disability. And what that means is that anything I wanted to do, that was like, you want to go to Six Flags, anything you want to get on, Fletch, we going to get on it. So, of course, the instructors are like, hey, this roller coaster is not wheelchair accessible. There's three steps to get in, and we don't have a ramp. And I was like, we didn't ask you that. Where is this where we enter? So, you know, my boys would just pick me up, throw me in the roller coaster, strap me in, having a ball, pick me out of my chair, do that. So it allowed me to achieve so much more. I'm pretty sure you've seen. You have in a lot of my social media videos, one of my friends throwing me off a cliff in a Mexican cenote, going skydiving, scuba diving with sharks, all those adrenaline things. There's some friends behind the camera that has made sure that I was able to do all this stuff.
I absolutely love this. Not to spoil what's left in our interview, but Fletcher points out all the incredible things he's been able to do since his injury. And when I first learned of his story, I was blown away by the diversity and the magnitude of the things he's done. He's done more things in a wheelchair than I've done on my own 2 feet. But the thing I hadn't considered until just now, that Fletcher points out here, is that those videos were shot by friends right there with him, supporting and cheering him on the whole way. Sometimes we absolutely need friends like that. And other times, I'm reminded, we need to be friends like that. Other than your immediate support network, did you connect with or did you find inspiration from others during this time that had maybe been through something similar, high-profile athletes or Paralympians, anything along those lines?
Some of the Paralympians were, because they would come visit the hospital, the rehabilitation center, because it's Shepherd Center is like the number one rehabilitation center for spinal cord injuries in the country. So they would come and do tours and stuff. And this is all about how you're motivated. I'm not really motivated by words, like just somebody coming and speaking to me and saying, you know, hey, I did it, you can do it. I'm motivated by competition. So show me a video of you doing it and I'm going to do it better than you.
Right. So I teach an athletic training for special populations course and we talk mm-hmm. about athletes with disability. I used to show the murder ball video. Talks about the U.S. wheelchair rugby team.
Yeah.
And there's a quote in there that I always just found remarkable. And they're talking about Mark Zupan, who was a well-known Paralympian. And his friends say, I think it was his friends, might even have been him. He said it. He said, I've accomplished more in this chair than I ever would have accomplished with functioning legs. He was a soccer player and he wasn't going to go to the Olympics on the U.S. soccer team, but mm-hmm. he ends up being one of the most successful Paralympians in history at that time. What do you make of that? Do you feel like this has led your life down a path that is in some ways better?
Yeah, I think, you know, selfish reasons, you know, it's like, Fletch, you have inspired millions of people. You've traveled the world. You've met amazing people. You've been on amazing podcasts. You've done all this. You've had a commercial made about you. And it's like, I get that, but selfish reasons, at the beginning, it was like, I'd rather not inspire anybody and just be normal and walk, you know, but then you realize like, hey, you're making a hell of a more impact on the community simply by just being you. And I never woke up and said, I'm going to be an inspiration today. I'm going to be a speaker today. I was just living life and people found inspiration within the task I was completing. And I realized there's like, you know, Fletch, how are you able to do this? When you want more, you do more. I tell people all the time, working hard is a factor of not giving up. Because the reason why a lot of people give up is because they don't put in the work. The reason why it's so easy for you to quit the football team because you haven't been to 4 days, or you haven't played football your whole life, or you haven't watched yourself go from 225 to 315 bench press, or even, you know, in a workforce, you know, it's easy for you to quit, or it's easy for you to drop out of school because you haven't studied four or five exams in one semester. You haven't put in the – once you put in the work and once you sacrifice, quitting is not an option because you've already given so much. So – and it was like, Fliss, why don't you quit? It was like, well, if you saw what I had to go through in therapy, what I had to do to get to this point, you wouldn't quit either. You would just continuously live. You would continuously strive, and you would just want to do more for yourself.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you graduate with your computer science degree. You've got the heart of a competitor, but the degree of an IT nerd. How do you go from that to this world-recognized platform? What's next for you after college graduation?
Yeah, after graduation, you know, I go into the typical IT field office, you know, khakis, tie, and all that fun stuff. And my story starts circulating around the AutoZone headquarters where I'm working at the time. And they was like, hey, do you mind us being an automotive company? And you can you just get up there and talk about safe driving? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I'll talk about it in front of like the IT and just overcome adversity. And they, you know, in a workforce, you don't want to be rude and say, hey, man, what happened to you? So a lot of people knew me, but they never knew what happened. And once they found that out, a lot of people started asking me to come speak to like their high schools and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, no, sure, no problem. And I just fell in love with giving presentations. And what really hit hard that made me want to transition to a full-time speaker is that I gave that presentation in front of the entire headquarters and probably like 8 minutes, didn't really have that much time. And the CFO of the company up there on the top floor with the big boys, right? He comes down to my little tiny desk in the basement in IT with no windows. I keep IT in the dungeon. And he's like, hey, man, I just want to say that was a phenomenal presentation. And you don't belong behind a desk. Like, you belong in front of people spreading your message, telling the world, inspiring the world. He was like, I don't see you working here 2 months longer. I was like, are you trying to fire me? Am I getting fired? It sounds like I'm getting fired. He's like, nah, you know, just me being a jokester. But having that caliber of person come down and say that to me and was like, maybe I can turn this into a profession.
Yeah. I think it's awesome when people can speak that kind of life into us. And I don't know if you had really given it much thought up to that point, but hearing somebody else from the outside view your speech and say that had to be motivating. So you're now known as the wheelchair nomad, and your tagline is the sky is not the limit. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so the sky is not the limit. I'm sitting in ICU. I come out of my first surgery, and the doctor tells me things. He goes around and says, but you are paralyzed. You won't be able to do X. You won't be able to do Y. You won't be able to do Z. Starts going down a list of things I won't be able to do, and I immediately reverted back to my mindset of being told I wouldn't start in high school football. I wasn't able to play varsity. You're too small to get a scholarship. You're too small to play as a true freshman. And I've been proving people they're wrong my entire life. So I immediately took that mindset, and I just was laying in the bed and like thinking to myself, like, this doctor's trying to put limitations on my life. Like, he doesn't know me. He doesn't know what I've done. He doesn't know what I've been through, what I've accomplished. And I just started thinking, there are no limits. He's constantly trying to tell me what I can and cannot do. And I'm like, there are no limits to life. And there are no limits to life. I just kept saying to myself, there are no limits to life. There are no limits in life. And then I just played on words and just thought about the quote when people say, the sky's the limit, the sky's the limit. And I challenged each one of y'all to think outside the box to say, how can we say the sky's the limit when there's footprints on the moon? Which in essence means that there are no limits. You can't tell me the sky's the limit when there's footprints on the moon. The only limitations are the ones you impose on yourself. And I just adopted that quote. And I ran with it, and I use it as a tagline and different presentations, making merch, as you can see, making a logo with the moon on it and a wheelchair, if you can see that right there. Yeah, and that's where that came from. So the sky's not, Fletcher Cleaver, the sky's not the limit, and it's a wheelchair on a moon.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's where that came from. And the second part about the wheelchair nomad, when I was in college, while I was in the hospital, I'm watching all my friends accomplish all the freshman things that we said we were going to do. Go to Daytona Beach for spring break. Go to homecoming, our first homecoming. Go to the first football game or whatever the case may be. I'm watching all my friends do these things that I want to do and travel the world and just be college freshman. And so, long story short, I'm like, hey, I need to get my body back to where I can start doing these things as well. So one spring break, we go to Nashville, which is only 3 hours outside of Memphis. And we're just hanging out, doing much of nothing. But this is the first time I've been without my parents for more than 5 hours at a time. So now it's just a weekend. We go Friday morning, come back Sunday, nothing major. But we're just hanging out. We go to the movies, hanging out in the mall, playing around, throwing Skittles, you know, just being 20-year-old college freshman at the time. So it was, well, I was a freshman. They were sophomores. And so and I just fell in love with traveling. So we started traveling more. We go to Dallas. We go to Mardi Gras. We go to L.A. We go to Chicago. And I'm posting all these pictures just like everybody else. But people found inspiration. Like, this guy in his wheelchair is everywhere. And I looked at my finances. I was like, hey, you've been to Vegas 3 times this year. Vegas is my favorite city in the United States. So it was like, you've been to Vegas 3 times this year. And I'm talking to myself. And I was like, how much is a flight to Italy? So I looked that up. I'm like, not that bad. So boom, I go to Italy, then I go to Paris, and I go to London, and I fall in love with the culture, the history of the Vatican and Rome and Julius Caesar and the Louvre in Paris and the Buckingham Palace in London. So I start venturing out even more. I go to Dubai, I go to Abu Dhabi, I go to Barbados, and I'm falling in love with different cultures and different foods. And I'm just posting pictures like everybody else. And somebody's like, dude, you're everywhere. You're like a nomad. And me being the jokester I am, I was like, yeah, call me the wheelchair nomad. And so I started using that tag in all my pictures, like the wheelchair nomad, the wheelchair nomad, the wheelchair nomad, and just continuously posting my pictures. But then I go to the Taste of Chicago, and my cousins were getting ready to go to a nightclub. They pull up to the front, put my chair out, and there's a line to get in. They put me in my chair. You know, I get my clothes together, put my cologne on, I'm about to roll in. And this lady comes up and says, excuse me, are you the wheelchair nomad? I'm like, how do you know that? She was like, I'm a part of this travel group and they post your stuff all the time. And you're such an inspiration. Can we take a picture? I'm like, sure. Once that happened, I was like, oh yeah, this is a thing.
Celebrity status achieved.
Achieved.
your commercial is fantastic. I believe it's done by ESPN. How do you go from working in IT with one speech for AutoZone to now having this global platform? How does it grow from there?
Yeah, so I've always had the platform, and just gradually, the plan was to gradually just do a little more each year. You know, next year I'm going to stop and be a full-time speaker. It was always next year. And before I looked up, I'd been working in IT 9 years. So I'm like, you know, this is like my early 30s. It's time to, if you really want to do this. I was in Toronto for New Year's Eve, and I'm looking at the 2023 sign. And, you know, I've had my website. I've done, you know, the Ohio States and the Ole Miss. And the, you know, I've done all these things, but it's always been played around my IT schedule. They were pretty lenient for the most part, especially during COVID. And I just knew this is not what I wanted to do for the next 40 years. So I knew I wanted to do this full time. So I'm in Toronto looking at the 2023 sign, 10-9-8, and I call God Big G. I'm like, Big G, if I'm supposed to be a full-time speaker, please lead me in the right direction. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, I got let go from my IT job. And it was just budget cuts. And I'm like, no, not, I didn't mean it like this. I did not like this. But it shows that because I was comfortable enough working my IT job. And it's hard to walk away from a lucrative field just off a whim. So I think God knew I would never have done it on my own. I would always played around with the thought of being a full-time speaker. And he gave me that push. And this just happened in February. So these past 6 months or so, I've been a full-time entrepreneur trying to do the best I can to keep my head above water and always continuously fight and just become a phenomenal speaker.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, obviously being pushed out of the nest like that is never great, but at that point you got to fly, right? Your story is certainly one of physical setback, but a lot of my listeners, they're facing to them a mountain in front of them as they lost their job or they're not able to get a job that they've applied for, or, you know, their kid didn't get into whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stuff. What do you tell them?
I tell people this all the time, man. Look, adversity happens to everybody. Crappy stuff happens to me. Crappy stuff happens to you. Crappy stuff happens to your neighbor. Everybody's been through something in their life, but it's not what happens to you that defines you. It's how you respond to it. How are you going to respond when your kid doesn't get in that school? How are you going to respond when you don't pass that math test? How are you going to respond when you're going through a divorce or whatever the case may be? you know, whatever your adverse situation may be. And I chose to respond in a positive manner. You can still achieve your dreams and your goals. And I tell people when writing down goals and dreams, how big would you dream if you knew you couldn't fail? If I knew that in the moment I thought I could become an astronaut, I would be an astronaut pledge. I want to be an astronaut. I'm like, all right, set aside the excuses, put your big boy underwear on and get to it, you know, whatever the case may be. And that's what I say to those people. It's like, don't let your current situation dictate your future. Don't let this adverse situation dictate the next 20 years of your life. You may be going through some downs at this time, but understand that nothing lasts forever. I've never seen a cloud sit over one person's house for an extended amount of time. Like, this too shall pass. This rain will go away. The rainbow's at the end of the storm. And when that sunshine comes out, what type of mindset are you going to have when this adverse situation is over? Did this adverse situation make you or did it break you?
Yeah. I was just reading about this last night. I'm studying for a new certification. It's called the Certified Performance Sports Science Credential.
Okay.
And so a lot of professional teams and now D1 schools are hiring these sports scientists who they gather data on how many total yards you cover during a practice and, you know, whether or not you're overtrained. We see this in the NBA a lot. Sits for load management. That's all coming from sports science. But the chapter I read last night was on psychology. And the prevailing thought was, if we can encourage our athletes to have an optimistic or positive mindset, it actually manifests physically. They heal better. They recover faster. This is not just kumbaya, be happy. It is, I can help that hamstring strain heal faster if I can get you to focus on the good versus the negative. And that's something you knew innately. And I would venture to say that your capabilities today are better because you had that outlook from day one. And
for sure.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I knew like whatever your mind thinks, your body will follow. I've seen different situations where people just mental therapy, where they are sitting there just thinking positive, like you said, it will heal. Whatever your mind thinks, your body will follow. So if you're constantly being negative and constantly saying it won't get better, I won't be able to play anymore, you're right. Your mind's going to affect your performance, and you're right. The person that says they can and the person that says they can't are both right. Which one will you be?
Yeah. So it's obviously not gone according to script, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't been a beautiful story. What advice, if you could go back in time and maybe equip young Fletcher with some sage wisdom that's going to help him on the journey, what would you tell him?
I tell him to stay out of Buffalo Wild Wings. Don't go. Stay home. I would say never accept the word no. Let no's fuel your fire. So the worst thing you can do is tell me I can't do something. So because now I'm going to make it my destiny to prove you wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make it mine. So don't allow people to form your life. Like, you know, it's your life. You know, that might be a little deep for a 7-year-old, but it's still positive thinking and just, you know, enjoy being a kid, just have fun and try to get your parents to invest in Google.
Sage advice. That's very much a Biff Tannen answer, right? That sports almanac.
No, take your life savings and just put it all in Google.
Well, I love music and the emotions that it can oftentimes represent. The words can't. If you had a song that played in the background during a montage of your life, what song would you pick and why?
Probably one of my favorite pregame songs, "The Heart of a Champion" by Nelly.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, it's the heart of a champion, you know, just telling me you can't give up. Keep going. Keep striving. Keep going. You know, so that was definitely, I listened to that even in therapy. Like, just what do we got to do today? All right. We got, you know, 4 sets of 25. Okay, cool. Let me get my headphones, "Heart of a Champion" on repeat. Just, you know, don't stop. Don't quit. And I would just have that montage playing over my live video.
Yep. That's great. That's a good one. I drop these into a Spotify mix with all my guests with their music. So if people want to listen, they can tune in.
Heart of a Champion.
Yeah. So what for Fletcher remains undone?
I still have so much I want to accomplish. I want to be recognized as one of the top speakers in the country. I want to visit all 8 wonders of the world. I want to be a prevalent advocate for accessibility in the tribal community, you know, coming from the wheelchair nomad. I want a family. I want to move to a new city. I want to do so much and all the things I've ever dreamt about to come to fruition and come to truth.
That's great. How can listeners connect with you and follow you and your various channels?
Yeah, definitely follow me on all my socials. You can find all of that at FletcherCleaves.com. And I think it's always hilarious when you're talking about celebrity status unlocked. Because I have been like on TED Talk and the commercial, and I've been on ESPN, and I do travel the world and have done these amazing things. People think I'm like Tom Brady or like I'm not like Kevin Hart or something where I'm not going to respond. And it's always funny when I like, hey, Fletch, I have a small podcast out of LA, just taking a shot, right? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. And they're always like, oh my God, you responded. I'm like, yeah, I'm a real person, bro.
Guilty as charged. Not only did you respond, you responded in today. Like,
yeah, we can do it right now. Gotcha. My name is Fletcher Cleaves, and I am undone.
For Fletcher Cleaves, it's safe to say that he didn't choose the path he finds himself on today, but through his positivity, his will, and that Nelly-inspired heart of a champion, he's made the world a better place. If you haven't seen him speak before, check him out on YouTube, or better yet, if you're an event planner looking for a keynote speaker, give Fletcher a call, because I guarantee you that you and your team will emerge better and stronger for hearing his story. For more info on today's episode, be sure to check it out on the web. Simply go to undonepodcast.com/EP55 to see the notes, links, and images related to today's guest, Fletcher Cleaves. I'll even drop a link to his website and all of his socials, so check it out there. I know there are great stories to be told, and I'm always on the lookout. So if you or someone you know has a story that we can all be inspired by, tell me about it. Surf on over to undonepodcast.com, click that contact tab in the top menu, and drop me a note. Coming up, I've got state champion Lubbock Estacado Matador head coach Tony Wagner, fitness personality Gio Marine, and former NCAA All-American and two-time national champion women's basketball player Emma Middleton Morris. So stay tuned. This and more coming up on Becoming Undone. Becoming Undone is a NitroHive creative production written and produced by me, Toby Brooks. If you or someone you know has a story of resilience and victory to share for Becoming Undone, contact me at undonepodcast.com. Follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Becoming Undone Pod. And follow me at Toby J. Brooks on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Listen, subscribe, and please leave me a review, people. Apple Podcasts. I want to grow the show, and I can't do it without reviews. I'll love you forever if you give me a review. I'll even read them on air, as long as they're good. You can also leave a review at Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, everybody, keep getting better.